Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
You're very welcome. I'm here with Dr. Sabina Brennan. We're having a chat about people who live around Shercock and Cavan, but we're going to go right back into the science. Manifesting is what we're talking about. It was called a noughties, a new age trend. And there was that bestseller, The Secret, which is making a sort of post-lockdown inspired Gen Z comeback. It's all over social media and into the real world. I mentioned Barry Keoghan earlier on. He's a great believer in manifesting. It's worked for him. So Dr. Sabina Brennan, you're from the Institute of Neuroscience at Trinity College Dublin.
Well, that's where I did my PhD, indeed.
Very good. And your new book is The Neuroscience of Manifesting. It's a kind of a... Is this popular science? Because it's a nice breezy read.
I hope it's popular. But it's definitely science.
Are you manifesting book sales? Does that work?
I don't know. I kind of feel like someone, you know, on their third album. My first two books were Irish Times number one bestsellers, and I'm kind of going, oh gosh.
Yes. And they were far more. Well, this is far more serious.
Yeah. But this is serious too. But I also think it's. I hope it's accessible. Yeah, my first one was 100 Days to a Younger Brain, but it's neuroscience. Yeah. The second one was Beating Brain Fog.
Yes,
neuroscience.
That's the one.
This one is The Neuroscience of Manifesting. Yeah, I mean, I became a psychologist and a neuroscientist out of a fascination with the human brain and human behaviour. So I'm kind of on a mission to get people to understand how their brains work so that they can understand how they work. And then kind of if you understand how you work, then you have a better chance of reaching your true potential. And to be honest, I kind of when you hear people talking about manifesting, there's a lot of parallels there.
Yeah.
That, you know, we both want to help people, but we kind of go about it in different ways. So I was kind of curious about, well, hold on a second. It is really often dismissed as woo and pseudoscience.
Why is that now? Why is manifesting kind of like, oh, that's only rubbish? And the scientists are saying that.
Oh, yeah. Scientists, academics, well-respected people say that. And, you know, there is so much misinformation on social media. There is a lot of misconceptions about what manifesting is. There is a lot of woo out there around it. But I still just wanted to, I didn't just want to dismiss it. I didn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater because I knew there's some of the practices are reflected in well-respected practices like cognitive behavioural therapy, CBT.
Yeah.
You know, CBT says that, the idea with CBT is that your thoughts and your perceptions influence your behaviour and your reality. And basically, fundamentally, that's what manifesting says, is that if manifestation practices, if you consciously control your thinking and your acting, you can influence your reality and your future, which kind of is the same thing.
Yeah, and cognitive behavioural therapy, that's used for people with depression.
Yeah, it's really just uses to help people to understand how their thinking patterns influence their behaviour and how their perception. So, for example, if you consciously have negative thoughts, if you think yourself bad about yourself, etc. Like if you think sort of bad things always happen, that influences your brain. There's billions of bits of information out there that your brain is being bombarded with. Okay, so it has to filter in information that it believes is relevant. So primary function of your brain is to keep you alive. Yeah. So loud noises, gunfire, cars, speeding, you know, your brain is going to filter that information in because, you know, dealing with that will save your life. But then after that, it's kind of depending on your thinking and your perceptions to decide what to filter in. So if you think bad things always happen, your brain will go, oh, there's another bad thing. Oh, there's another bad thing.
Constant negative.
Yeah. And we're already primed to the negative because negative things could be dangerous. They could impact on, you know, our safety. So basically, kind of, one of the core ideas is that if you switch up that thinking, if you have clarity about what you want in life, you know, what goal you want to manifest, you're giving your brain a very clear message that this is what is important and relevant to me. So your brain has a clear message now, what to filter in. And essentially, it activates the salience network in your brain. And so I use an example in the book of when we were saving to get married, our car went on fire, an old Fiat Ritmo, you know, and suddenly we had to buy a new car. It spontaneously combusted, like nobody set it on fire. And so it was back in the day when there was newspapers and pictures of cars and the ads. And my husband said, I think something like this, a Mazda 323, you know, we might get one of those. I had no idea what a Mazda 323 looked like. I still have no interest in cars.
Modest goals.
Yeah. No interest in cars. The next day, suddenly I just saw Mazda 323s everywhere.
Yes, you do.
Absolutely everywhere. Now, if you were to believe some of the woo online, I would have attracted those into my life. Mm-hmm. Now, look, those Mazda 323s were always there. They were just not relevant or salient to me.
My brain was not
going to filter that information in. Yeah. Now that it knows it's important, it's going to say, oh, that's important, that's important. And also, oh, there's an advertisement in the paper about a Mazda 323 going
for sale.
Did you
end up buying a Mazda?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, and I think it kind of collapsed as well. You know, they were back in the day, you know, when, you know, rusty old cars were allowed on the road.
Fix it again tomorrow.
Yes.
So how does your version, you talked about the woo and the quack, how does your version of manifesting work, and you've grounded it in science?
Yeah, it's not my version. I mean, I'm not a manifesting guru, I'm a neuroscientist, and really what I wanted to do was weed out the woo.
So the scientific version.
And get to the core of it. So, basically, you know, there's a number of steps. Clarity is one that's always, you know, discussed in manifesting as the first step. I believe there's some foundational steps have to happen first. But if you have clarity about what you want, this is supposedly how, and this is how manifesting really works. You then visualize it. You imagine the steps that you would have to take for it to happen.
Yeah.
So then you have you develop an action plan from that. Also, there is like a bit of when you visualize what it is you want with manifesting, it gets you to really, you know, use your body and your thinking and go in detail. You might actually discover that what you think you want isn't what you want. So you kind of can go back to the drawing board. So it kind of the visualization helps in that way. If it is what you want, we know from science that visualization activates the same areas in your brain. This is what sports people do.
Yes.
You know, they can actually practice their golf swing or whatever without physically doing it. It still is a form of practice because the areas of your brain are activated. It also can boost your confidence so that actually if you're visualizing, you know, that you're going to get such and such a job, you're more confident that if you go for an interview for that job, that you've imagined it, you've thought it through, you'll probably do a better interview.
And you visualize the end goal.
You're visualizing the end goal. But what I have to say is one of the biggest misconceptions is that manifesting is wishful thinking, where you just visualize what you want and then sit back and wait for it to happen.
I want a Porsche.
Yeah.
It'll just happen.
The universe will deliver. No. The universe will not deliver. And in fact, my version would say that you do not need to invoke higher powers or anything. All the power resides within your brain if you can understand how to use it. So basically, you know, there are a couple of fundamental things and steps that you really have to do first. And I would argue that you need to connect with yourself, your authentic self. You need to actually understand who you are to understand what you really want. And that's another aspect of manifesting. You know, it encourages self-awareness, self-questioning. And in that, you can question your own limiting beliefs. So again, coming to the CBT, you can say, well, why do I think I'm not good enough?
Yeah.
And where did I get that from? And the thing is, your sense of self, all those limiting beliefs that you have, they've just been constructed by your brain. I mean, your brain just takes whatever data is available. We tend to think that who we are is innate and immutable, but actually it's just a story that your brain has made up based on information. And some of that information can go back to when you're 3 or 4 and some teacher said something to you in school like you'll never be good at maths or you'll never make anything
That's
of
right.
yourself.
And you believe it.
But well, you do, because you see your brain doesn't make any value judgments about the information. It's just collecting information. And we also never check our story. We don't have a proofreader.
Yeah.
And actually what self-awareness is like doing is going back and proofreading your story and saying, where did that come from? Is that actually true? No, it's not. And so again, in that process, when you're imagining what you might want, If you've actually done the research and understand who you are, you can start to strip back, like, why do you want a Porsche?
Yes.
Why do you want that handbag? You know, why do you want to manifest whatever it is you want to manifest?
And is that materialism that you see online?
It's all the materialism online. So basically what I would say is really manifesting is much more about values. Because if you strip away all those things and keep, why do you want that? Why? Well, because I, you know, ultimately you come to the answer. Because I want to be happy.
Yeah, and you think that's going to make you
happy. And you think that's going to make you happy. But then as you, if you strip away, and there's an exercise I talk about, I certainly do it in my talks, I'm not sure if I do it in my book, but basically if you sit down and write down all the things that you do in your life, all the roles that you play, who you are, father, sister, friend, brother, and then you must never show this to anyone else, because beside those you write how much you love doing it and why you do it. And basically, you will find that there's tons of things in there that you do and you have absolutely no idea why you do them. You're sort of, our brains are manifesting all the time, unconsciously. So basically, your brain is like a prediction machine. It's predicting that, you know, when I walk through that door, it will close. There'll be a seat for me to sit on or whatever. So it's kind of predicting your future.
Right.
It's guiding your behavior that way. But it's under the influence of your beliefs, which could be limiting, your biases. We have inherent unconscious biases, and heuristics. Your brain has to use shortcuts to navigate the world. And so essentially, we're creating our own futures unconsciously, influenced by all these things. Yeah. What manifesting is doing is to say, let's now consciously think about what we would really like.
What we want and why we want
it. And why we want it. And let's consciously figure out what action we need to take and then take those actions. We have to develop discipline and focused attention. And that's hard. So manifesting is not easy.
It's not sitting back.
It's hard work. And having focused attention takes a lot of effort. But that focused attention is what brings the things into your life, not attraction.
Yeah. You reckon in Ireland we're particularly self-critical of ourselves?
Yes. So the other fundamental step in manifesting to ensure success is to develop self-compassion, self-love. Be kind to yourselves. And I mean, I still struggle with that. And I was talking to Michael, your researcher, you know, and I think any Irish person, I mean, you know, we often said, oh, Jesus, he's full of himself. He loves himself.
Yeah.
Do you know?
And
it's
really
a
critical.
Negative.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a negative to love yourself.
He's a great welcome for himself.
Oh, that's a brilliant one. I've heard a few funny ones. He's up his own. I won't finish that one.
Up himself.
Yeah, yeah. But the fact of the matter is, self-criticism is really a form of self-harm. It actively, in your brain, it activates your amygdala and, you know, induces stress. Whereas research shows that kindness, including self-kindness, releases serotonin, makes you feel calm. It actually boosts your feelings of happiness. It also boosts feeling of contentment.
Yeah.
If you're being kind to others and to yourself.
You're giving and not taking.
Yes. But, you know, the point here is if you give to yourself, you'll get those benefits. And when you're kind to other people or yourself, oxytocin is released, which is often referred to as the love hormone. It's released in mothers after they have babies. It's released after people orgasm with sex. It's about kind of connecting and feeling good.
Yeah.
So just being kind to someone can release that. But also then if you actually are kind to yourself, it means actually, what are we all searching for? Happiness and contentment. If you're kind to yourself, it will help you with that. And on a lot of the sort of opposite of kindness, our self-compassion is judgment and criticism. And that kind of will hold you back. Now, this all has to be grounded in reality.
Yeah.
It's just being
kind,
being
is like,
balanced. Yes. Yeah, so
it's like an orgasm. That would have been a better... What a great title for the book.
Have more orgasms by being compassionate to yourself. No, it doesn't result in that. But
You, it's the self-compassion techniques, which you talk about here.
Yeah.
Affirmations.
Oh, so these are the manifesting techniques.
Okay.
And yes, I mean, again, some of those things feel strange to some of us. So
really do. Yeah. This is where it starts to feel American.
It does start to feel American. Yeah, yeah. And it's actually not. Basically, actually, if you trace manifesting back, you know, we're going way before the aughties. There was a spate of it kind of early 90s as well. But it goes way, way, way back, you know, to Buddhism. There's kind of a lot of traits with that. But really, when it comes to kind of self-love and self-compassion, it's about having a balanced acceptance. This is the way it is. So it's not about being exaggerating or, you know, over or under responding. It's just, that's kind of just the way it is. You know, how can I move forward from there? So sort of accepting yourself is a great way to start it, rather than being overly critical of yourself.
Okay. So what do you say to yourself then? What are the affirmations that you wake up?
Oh, so the affirmations, yeah. I mean, the affirmations are thought to actually activate neuroplasticity in your brain. So it's a way of learning, you know?
Okay.
So I am good enough. I can do it. We say it to people, you got this. You got this?
Yeah.
You kind of go, okay, I got this.
What's wrong with we have this?
But do you know what? My husband, he doesn't read. He read books. You know, he might listen to books on Audible or whatever. He wouldn't be into science, wouldn't have a science brain. But he instinctively stands in front of the mirror in the morning and say, looking good. You know, you're looking good, you know, not bad for whatever. Whereas I look in the mirror and go, oh my God, look at the lines on my face. And oh, do I really look like my mother now? My mother's passed away, so she won't hear.
Okay.
But so it's something actually that a lot of people do naturally. But
so you
for
say
others,
that about
we have to learn.
And if you go meet your friend then for coffee, you're praising them to the height, aren't you?
Yeah, that's the thing. We're very kind to other people, but unkind to ourselves. So, yeah, I mean, we need to be, it's not about being unrealistic and looking in the mirror and saying, you know, you're as skinny as be damned when actually you really need to lose weight. It's about saying you are where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
What is it important to you to lose weight? Why would you like to lose weight?
Very good, yeah.
Well, you know, maybe it's for your health. And the thing is, I think the whole thing about the self-awareness and connecting and understanding with who you are, you may realize that, for example, if you want to, you'd love to have a muscled, toned body, etc. And your driving force is your health. Perhaps you want to lose weight. And then you kind of look at what steps you would have to take. You visualize, oh my God, you would have to get a six pack. You'd have to go to the gym and you'd have to work out X, Y, Z number of days. You've got your list of what's important to me in life. My family's really important to me. I love spending time with my kids. I like spending time with my husband. I like to go out with my friends. I like to do my job, blah, blah, blah. I can't fit that in. How much do I really want that six pack compared to what the things in life are
Very
making
good.
Me happy?
Yeah.
And so what you might decide is, I'm going to actually eat healthily, get to a healthy weight so that I can actually feel good about myself and forget about that idea of
That's
a six pack.
That's what you have time for.
It's imbalance, what actually you're considering all the other things that make you happy,
yeah,
as opposed to thinking that if I have a six pack, I'll be happy. And you're probably just influenced by looking at the photographs of people on social media. You have to say as well, social media is filtering in certain images. It's not showing you the more natural
it
images.
It promotes the self-criticism that
it
you're
kind
talking
of,
about.
Yeah, it really does. It actually really does, you know.
There's a text in here at the moment. Carol says she's reading the book at the moment. It's fabulous. Well worth the read.
Oh, thank you, Carol.
Already. And there is a question. I don't know if you may have a chance. Does Sabina think the ADH brain will find manifesting more difficult?
OK, so the attention deficit. Now, I always am honest. I didn't particularly, you know, research that, look into it. Mm. But I mean, an ADH brain, you know, we're talking about neurodiversity here. Mm. I think attentional issues may be a challenge.
Yes.
But I think that's one of the key points that I make in the book, is that we do not start our manifesting journey at the same starting point. We are all different. Our brains are all diverse, not necessarily in the AD way, but based on our lifestyle, our experiences, our genetics, we're starting, it's not a level playing field to start. And I use an example in the book, actually, of a couple who want to improve their health. They want to eat better, they want to exercise better, and they want to have healthier sleep habits. And they start the journey together. And he is doing much better than she is. Now, she could get down on herself and go, this is dreadful, I'm a failure or whatever. But the reason she's not succeeding is she has a genetic predisposition to insomnia.
Right.
She doesn't sleep well. And we know from science that if you don't sleep well, you are not only more likely to eat more calories the next day, you feel hungrier, between 300 and 600 calories a day if you're deprived of sleep, extra. You seek those calories from fatty foods and sugary foods.
Comfort.
You have less energy. And therefore, her boyfriend who doesn't have those, he can be more disciplined. He's doing that. She's fighting a much bigger challenge.
It's not the same.
So it's not the same. So she should not be comparing herself to another person, but to herself.
And perhaps an ADHD brain perhaps would have a...
It depends how modest your goal is, isn't it?
It
depends. And I think that's the key. So basically what I was... That sort of end of that story is instead of her trying to achieve a healthy lifestyle, her first step should be to look into her insomnia and see what she can do to address that. And it is exactly what you said. You know, I firmly believe, you know, one step at a time, you know, and I think there's absolutely no reason that somebody with various challenges can't achieve goals. And that comes to health. Even people with life-threatening diseases can improve their quality of life and their happiness by, you know, manifesting change or adopting healthier lifestyles, you know, for in the moment. You're not going to cure your own disease or, you know, whatever.
Yes, yeah.
But you can improve the quality of your life and your happiness levels. And that's really kind of
that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Can I ask about the idea of prayer and, you know, people light candles for things?
Yeah.
There's a bit of manifesting going on there, isn't there?
Yeah, I suppose in a way. I mean, what's really rather interesting when I was doing the research from this book, there's a huge relationship between science, religion, you know, science, religion and magic. They've kind of always been, they've had an intertwined history. And what I say in the book is science is just magic explained.
We used to think was magic.
Thunderstorms were considered, you know, magical or messages from the gods or whatever. So I think there's huge value in religiosity. Throughout the book, I talk about the importance of human connection and feeling connected with people and social. Religion gives you that. And those prayers sort of act in a way like affirmations, you know, you're asking for something. But the way affirmations work is it keeps that focus in your brain so that you can stay focused on what is important. But really, prayer without action, what you might find if people
it's
say
a good starting point, but you still have to act.
Yeah, but I think you might find that people who say their prayers were answered, actually, if you look at it, there probably is some action has occurred in between, you know.
There's a connection, and I suppose religious practices often make people do good things for the community and so on, and that makes them feel happy.
In the book I talk about how people's the electrical activity in people's brains who believe in religion and who don't, actually their brains operate in a slightly different way, which is really fascinating.
And that brings us to a conclusion, because we're just electricity zapping around.
We are electricity and chemicals, yes.
Listen, it's a lovely chatting to you. Thanks so much for coming. This is Dr. Sabina Brennan. The book is called The Neuroscience of Manifesting, The Magical Science of Getting the Life You Want, because the magic is the science.
That's it.
Essentially is. Good luck to you. Back up to Shercock. Did you manifest yourself a lake? Surely there's a lake somewhere.
There is a lake at the end of my garden. Oh, I manifested the beautiful house and the lake of my head.
Throughout Cavan.
Yeah. It should be marketed as Dublin or Ireland's Lake District.
Yeah, the Lake District. Very good.
It should be.
That
it's
is something someone on a tourism board needs to start manifesting now.
Yes.
Thank you. Safe home back to the Lake District. 51551 is their text. Back out.
Email oliver@rte.ie.